Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Thank you, Ian. It was 9:09 now, and I was watching former President Carter's funeral, the arrival of his body in Washington and the procession to the rotunda and so forth, having been in D.C., over the weekend, and it got me to thinking about, for whatever reason, Dale Earnhardt, when he died, it would seem to me a NASCAR driver, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful here, but that a hearse should move at like 120 miles an hour if you got a NASCAR driver in the back of it. If you got a race car driver, the hearse, the last thing in the world would be disrespectful to go slow, right? Fiegel in the studio, what do you think? He's saying, yeah, he agrees with me. I don't know what got me to thinking about that, but it did. Greg Upton joins us now, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing great.
Happy New Year. I got my own rules for that. Haven't spoken to you, so I wish you a Happy New Year. And while I'm talking about former President Carter, and I hope I don't catch you flat-footed here, but I may or may not be old enough to remember the oil embargo, whatever it was, and the gas lines and waiting in line, hoping I get enough gas to go on a date in high school. Maybe I'm not. The records are sealed on that until the late 2000s for people to find out my true age. But take me, if you will, the history, Greg. And again, I hope I'm not catching you off guard here. How do we go from gas lines in the 70s, and watching Jimmy Carter's funeral got me thinking about this. How did we go from gas lines in the 70s to the oil boom in the 80s, about which I was having a conversation with somebody over the weekend, and how the Louisiana has not been the same since, and where we are today? Can you do that for us or not?
Yeah, sure. So, There's a great book I recommend for your readers who are actually interested in kind of digging into this. It's a book called Crude Volatility by Bob McNally. And that book goes through, like, from the beginning, talking in the early 1900s, the beginning of oil production, and kind of the history and kind of the politics of how you had these fluctuations, and items like you talk about the 1970s. But here's the kind of two-minute version of that.
You can give us a five-minute version.
Okay, that sounds good. So you go back to the first oil and gas well in the United States was drilled in the 1870s, in Pennsylvania, Titusville, Pennsylvania. Moved to the Gulf Coast in the early 1900s. In fact, 1901 is when the first well was drilled here in Louisiana. And we really had this kind of boom of increase in production all the way until about 1970. At that point, oil production started to decline.
Why?
And we kind of entered because of the resource that was there. So there was, you had a lot of production. You had growth. All of kind of the low-hanging fruit, if you will.
The cheap, easy oil. If you don't mind me interrupting for a second, Professor, just so I can understand. The cheap, easy oil that was there, right, was gone. Was that it? Accurate or not?
That's exactly right.
All right.
So production started to decline. And at that time, of course, demand for gasoline and diesel and jet fuel and all these products that we actually use that are derived from the oil continued to expand. And so this increased our reliance on these international sources of oil. And in particular, the relevant one is, of course, the Middle East. So the Middle East was seeing expanding production over that time period. And that expanding production was increasing imports into the United States.
Let me interrupt one second, so, Craig, if I can. So yeah. Oil production declines. That means that there is cheap available oil in the Middle East, and now they are better able to, or at least the market in America opens up because now they can produce cheap available oil, relatively so, and the U.S. becomes
That's
dependent
right.
on that? Am I on anything?
That's You got it. That's
okay.
right. So our production's declining, our demand is increasing, and therefore we are purchasing this oil from other parts of the world, and in particular, the Middle East.
Okay, so.
So, of course, when you start importing oil from the Middle East, this can create geopolitical tensions of energy security and all of these kind of tag words that are out there that we discuss. And so when politicians start restricting the import of products or restricting prices of products, that is what leads to these shortages that you saw in the 1970s. And so kind of thankfully, at least from an economist's perspective, we've kind of moved past those kind of policies. And now today we really have this global market for oil and gas that we, you know, we trade oil and gas globally.
Let me go back one second.
Sure.
So the oil embargo happens. That was prompted
By the federal government.
No, wait, I mean, from the Middle East. Why do we have the shortage?
Oh, from the you're saying back to the 1970s.
Back to, yeah, I'm going back to the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. So I need to go get the specific history of exactly the
it was political
the events that happened there. Absolutely.
Okay, it was political. So the yes. Oil the what is it? OPEC says, you know what? That's it. We're cutting off the spigots. So after that, something leads to the oil boom in Louisiana because it's like, well, from now on, we're not going to be dependent on OPEC anymore. Accurate or not?
No, so we continue to import oil from the Middle East, and we actually do. We still do to this day. And then in the around 2010, so you go from 1970 to 2010, U.S. oil production was declining. And then in 2010, that's when you had the advent of shale.
Hang on, horizontal drilling. I hate to keep interrupting, but I got to know why.
Okay.
Did we have the Louisiana oil boom in the 80s? Because I remember living on the West Bank. Man, it was happy days are here again. It was like the gold strike in California almost, right?
Absolutely.
So
yes.
why did that happen, I guess, what I'm asking? What happened to that and what caused it to bust? How did we go from what led to the boom of the 80s to the bust after that?
So we had price fluctuations between 1970 and into the late 1970s. Prices went up. This led to a boom in oil production and economic activity. And then in 1982, that's when you had the oil price bust. And that was draconian for the Louisiana economy. That put us in a recession. And that was, that was really, really bad for the Louisiana economy in particular. And then the oil production within the United States just kind of continued to decline after that time period.
I didn't mean to keep interrupting you. I'm just trying to understand. So the market conditions that led to the boom in Louisiana were caused by increased consumption, and it made it, because of higher prices, it was profitable for the oil companies to go back and get the oil that wasn't as easy to get as it was initially?
No. Yeah, so you've got kind of two things going on. You have the longer term trend, which is, what the availability of the oil is. The other longer term trend you have going on is technology. And so the sophistication of the companies and how much information they have, what they're able to extract. The shorter term fluctuation you have is the price. And so when the price goes up, holding technology and availability constant, you're going to produce more oil. When the price goes down, you're going to produce less, And that's going to create these kind of business cycle fluctuations that that occur. And that is exactly what happened in 1982 when we had the oil price crash here in Louisiana. It was a price fluctuation, and that you know, that negatively impacted the local economy.
And I think it's important that we understand the history of that as we move forward here. When it comes to want to take a break or keep going? Let me keep going here. So the when it comes to U.S. oil production now, before we get to the Biden administration, when it comes to U.S. oil production and the market and OPEC and oil not being oil and refineries and gasoline, it's not as simple as it seems because oil is not all oil, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we have, you know, oil production here in the United States is a different quality than the oil production in other parts of the world. It's got different kind of technical, you know, characteristics. And so the refineries, both here in the United States and globally, will respond to the kind of supply that's out there. And so they'll make, you know, they'll make literally these technical changes to the refineries that allow them to take in different types of oil. But in the short run, if you have a big fluctuation, that can be hard to adjust. But in the long run, you can kind of make these adjustments.
So when it comes to the United States being self-dependent when it comes to drilling and oil, and the price of oil and then eventually gasoline, how independent are we when it comes to that, and how dependent are we when it comes to OPEC, and can they open or close the proverbial spigot whenever they want to influence the supply and price of oil and gas?
So today, I think we are less susceptible to these kind of international price shocks that we see. And you could have the example of OPEC. Mm-hmm. The other example, of course, when Russia invaded Ukraine and we saw what happened to markets after that. Because the United States today produces record levels of oil, record levels of natural gas. You know, we're a net exporter of all these products to the world. And so whenever you have a price shock that happens, such as OPEC making a decision, a geopolitical event such as in the Middle East or Russia, it will impact that international price, and it certainly does impact us here, but I think less so than it might have in the 1970s or the 1980s or even the 1990s when you had U.S. oil production was declining over that time period.
And also when it comes to capital expenditures or federal preparation, the actual engineering of this, there is some preparation involved, and given market what's the word I'm thinking of, fluctuation, you don't just turn on a valve when you decide to go drilling for oil. It goes to leasing, and we'll get back to that after the commercial break in the Biden administration and the steps that are involved in drilling for oil. It can't be done overnight. That's an accurate statement, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And especially with offshore, which we're about to talk about, you're talking a decade lead time between the initial process and actually producing oil.
All right, let's get back. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll pick it up at shale. And I appreciate you tolerating this fool gladly, because I can hear it in your voice, Greg. You're like, yeah. But we don't know that. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to educate myself and the audience here, because you and the people in the industry know that, but I think a lot of people don't. So thanks for suffering this fool gladly. 921 more with Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies. When we come back, Tommy Tucker, WWL.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping, and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
Greg Upton, our guest, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies, talking about the Biden administration, what they're trying to do with banning drilling in most federal waters. Let me step away from fracking for a moment and get to this, Greg, because President Biden, take me through his administration and the history of his administration with oil and gas, because there's no, I doubt in my mind that he's not a fan of oil and gas. He did what he could to do away with exploration, but then he kind of backed off on it when he realized he couldn't. Tell me about his last 4 years in office, the Biden administration, as it relates to oil and gas exploration, specifically Louisiana.
Sure. So one of the first actions that President Biden took when he took office was his executive order on climate change. And part of that executive order, as you and I, of course, talked about multiple times over that time period, was the discontinuing of offshore leasing while a comprehensive review of these leasing practices was conducted. Immediately, states such as Louisiana sued the federal government. This kind of went through the courts. At the same time, we had the Inflation Reduction Act that was being negotiated. Eventually, all this kind of worked through the system. The offshore leasing continued, and with the Inflation Reduction Act, offshore leasing was continued through that as well, moving forward. Some in the industry, of course, have critiqued the Biden administration of not only providing uncertainty to the industry by taking these actions, but also that the leasing itself has been at a slower clip than you might have had under a Trump administration, for instance. So this has kind of been a consistent policy of the Biden administration. So, of course, now you have the Trump administration that's going to be coming into office here in the next few weeks. And the Trump administration is already talking about and talked about on the campaign trail, really unleashing this U.S. energy production. And so the kind of game plan, according to the Trump administration and a lot of those in Congress that we've interacted with, are saying that we really want to enter this era of unleashing supply, and that, of course, includes offshore leasing and leasing on state lands and water bottoms. So what we saw this last week is President Biden has come in and via these two memoranda has stated that all of these areas, and it's in the eastern Gulf of Mexico, the East Coast, the West Coast, up to Alaska, that the federal government is not going to move forward with leasing in some of these areas. And so kind of the legal implications of that, I'm not quite sure from a legal standpoint how that's going to persist into the next administration. But the idea is to make it more difficult for the next administration to open up these new areas to leasing in order to, of course, restrict the supply of those products.
So if the Biden order goes away and if President Trump gets his way and we drill, baby, drill, what does that mean for the oil supply for the United States? What does it mean for the economy of the Louisiana, for the economy of the United States, gas prices, all that stuff, Greg?
So if you expand oil and gas production, this is going to lead to an increase in supply that can have positive effects on consumers, because if you increase the supply of any good or service, that's going to put downward pressure on the price. The other thing it does is it will, of course, impact the people that are within those industries, right, that you have more oil and gas production, and therefore you've got more jobs needed to support those things. It also impacts us here in Louisiana because we take this energy and we use it as feedstocks and to produce lots of products. So not only are we very energy-intensive manufacturing here, so we use the energy itself, but we also take those hydrocarbons to produce stuff like liquid fuels, chemicals, plastics, fertilizers, and then we ship those products all over the world. And so, as you and I have talked about, we've seen a decade of increase in employment in those kind of manufacturing sectors that has been made possible because of the availability of those hydrocarbons. The kind of flip side of that, and I think is the Biden administration's concern, at least at the beginning of this being part of a climate change executive order that initially started all of this, of course, is what's going to be the impact of that on emissions. And so some on that side of the aisle say that this is going to increase global emissions and therefore perhaps the economic benefits are not worth those emissions, which can, of course, have negative impacts on people.
How good could a Trump administration be for Louisiana and offshore drilling in the oil industry?
So I think that certainly it will. There's likely to be easier moving forward with offshore leasing. So in terms of direction, I think that that's going to be good for that industry. In terms of the magnitude of the effect, it's not really clear how large of an effect it will have. And so the Biden administration has argued that, look, we're continuing with leasing. We're continuing with leasing the most productive areas. They argue that they haven't stopped production from these areas that have been leased. And so, you know, how much of an impact that it will have is kind of uncertain. But in terms of the direction of impacting that industry, of course, a Trump administration policy is going to be preferred by that industry. The other point I'll make, and this is putting on my economist hat of the short run and the long run, you know, but the short-term impacts are probably quite muted, especially because of, like you and I talked about before the break, of the time period for which it takes to bring to go from leasing all the way to the point of production.
Before we let you go, going back to not just the energy issues, but when it comes to the plastics, et cetera, that come from oil and gas exploration, for those that tend to panic when they see something like this, oil and gas is not going anywhere, anytime in the foreseeable future at all, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, you look at any of these, the World Energy Outlook, you look at the U.S. Energy Outlook. I mean, pretty much any outlook you look at globally has oil and gas being a significant part of our energy mix and the feedstocks for these other products that we're talking about well into the next century. So I think that we're going to have oil and gas for a very long time.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate your time and your insight and your patience as always. Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jeff Nowak about a different type of black and gold, the Saints, and 2024 season, players looking ahead to 2025. And getting better, 9:34, 26 till 10, traffic now, WWL.